The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Shuffling some things around here right before the big program. Lots to get to. So much to discuss and cover with you on today's program. If you'd like to email the show, by the way, you can send your comments to td@kpcg.fm. Well, the Munich Security Conference is the most prestigious geopolitical gathering in the world, as I discussed with you the other day. At last year's gathering, that was the final year of Barack Obama's presidency, the global security establishment expressed concern over American disengagement abroad. And this year, conference organizers are forecasting a new world order. Should the United States continue its retreat from overseas, now in pursuit of Donald Trump's new America First vision, you'll recall the decree he sent out to every foreign capital on the day of his inauguration. Well, according to the organizers of this annual security conference in Munich, the consequences of U.S. retreat will be tremendous, it says in the report that they released on Monday, I believe it was. They said other international actors will fill the vacuum left by America. They talked about how the foundational institutions of this world are going to be upended. Spoilers will be emboldened, this report warned. And according to the security report, here again, released just in advance of this conference, I think it starts tomorrow, it says America's allies may see no alternative than to start hedging by seeking out new partners. So that's what's happening in the world today. And you add to that, this was something that the conference chairman, a German diplomat, Wolfgang Ischinger, he said that America, under Donald Trump's leadership anyway, that America no longer qualifies as the symbol of the West's political and moral leadership. And so the United States is disqualified from leading the West because of Donald Trump. And who do you think he's calling for to step up? Well, of course, it's the German-led European Union, the new torchbearer of the West. Europe, he says, if it just comes together more strongly, if it bands together, he said Europe can be a great political power and a great military power. That, according to this German diplomat, the conference chairman at the Munich Security Conference, Europe can become a great military power, and as we've been discussing a lot of late, the United States, of course, is just fine with that. Yesterday, in a closed-door meeting with NATO allies in Brussels, America's new Defense Secretary James Mattis, he put the NATO member states on notice. He said that American taxpayers are no longer going to carry a disproportionate share of the defense of Western values. Europe's got to step up. NATO members have to step up, and they have to defend Western values. Everyone's got to pay their fair share. The Times of London, it said this about that closed-door meeting yesterday. The warning from Mr. Mattis, the first member of Mr. Trump's top team to visit Europe since the president's inauguration, heralded a bruising new phase in the transatlantic relationship. Here we are now, transitioning into this bruising new phase. If Europe wants America's support, European nations better step up and pay their bills. And this warning, of course, comes at a time when there appears to be this thaw in U.S.-Russian relations, even as Russia ramps up military activities all across Europe's Eastern Front. So Europe's very nervous right now. And that's why you see them stepping forward now and taking not just talking about it, but taking action to build up and strengthen its defense, its military. You think about all the things that were said during the presidential campaign. Donald Trump out there saying that, well, what if, when he was asked about if Russia were to invade one of those Baltic states, would the United States come to their defense? And he said, well, you know, it would depend on whether or not they paid their bills. Have they? Let's forget about our obligation to them. Let's talk about their obligation to us. This is America first. That's the new era. And so everyone has to step it up. And as I said on Tuesday's program, of course, the German defense minister, Ursula von der Leyen, she said, well, these were fair demands. They're fair. We're fine. We need to step up. That's true. We'll take the lead. And that's where we are today. This very organization, rather, that was put in place to prevent Germany from rising militarily. It's now being seen as, well, Germany's vehicle for building one. You take charge of NATO. You're in Europe. These are your borders that you're concerned about. Well, all of these things are happening so fast, and some of these clips we have gathered for today's program, they're ones that you're familiar with. Who was telling you this for many, many decades? Who was telling you that this was going to happen as far back as the 1940s even? Even coming off the end of World War II, when Germany was buried in rubble. Here's one example. This is clip number 3 from Herbert Armstrong.
And some of us, my friends, know not only what we see when we're over there, but we know also what is prophesied. And we know what is prophesied to rise up in Europe. And we know which is the one and the only nation in Europe that is capable of dominating, and which is the economic and the industrial heart of all Europe, without which there could be no stability and strength. A human body cannot live without its heart. And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
The heart is right there in the heart of Europe. Germany. Politico had a piece today that says the solution to NATO's troubles, NATO's spending woes, as the Politico put it, the solution lies in Germany. Germany can fix this. Germany can fix the economy. Germany can fix the military problem. Politico says NATO's survival depends on Germany. And then it talks about how wealthy Germany is. Notice what it says here, though. It says, with Europe's largest GDP and by far its strongest economy, Germany is the swing state in European defense. If Berlin commits to spending the recommended 2% of GDP on defense, it would add $30 billion of defense spending in Europe, a large share of the $100 billion surplus that would be generated if all European members and Canada met their targets. I mean, if everybody chips in like the United States is urging them to do, you're talking about $100 billion. The move would significantly boost European defense. Now, Politico says this. The question, however, is whether Germany can or indeed should become the leading military power in Europe. I mean, that's the question. Should it become the leading military power in Europe? Really? Germany? Germany's already one of the world's leading defense manufacturers and exporters. Well, they're exporting weapons, no problem. All it takes is a little bit of money. Well, and as we know from Bible prophecy, it's going to take some different leadership as well. But once that's in place, I mean, already the money's being redirected. And the Daniel 8 man's not even in there yet. How fast do you think this transformation can come about? With Germany's strong economy, the dominant one in Europe. And then a Daniel 8 man comes on the scene. We'll look at some of those scriptures here in just a second. And the mind change happens. And as I say, they're already manufacturing all kinds of weapons. Keep some more of those at home, and they're good to go. The question is, or indeed, it says in the quote here, the question is whether Germany can or indeed should become the leading military power in Europe. That's about all that you get as far as warnings are concerned in the major media. Just a question. Well, should they? And then carry on. Spiegel had a piece, speaking of the Daniel 8 man, Spiegel had a piece here this week about the changing political climate in Germany. And it says here Merkel might lose after all. I mean, the German publications are already preparing for her defeat. And there's 6 months to go. Spiegel says Angela Merkel's re-election is looking less certain by the week. Less certain by the week. It talks about Martin Schulz, the latest adversary of hers coming from the Social Democrats, and how much enthusiasm and excitement there is in his party, quite unlike Ms. Merkel's. It says here, last Monday, Merkel was sitting in the headquarters of the Christian Social Union, or CSU, the Bavarian sister party, to her CDU, looking as though she were a guest at her own funeral. Next to her was CSU head, Horst Seehofer, who, after months of castigating the chancellor for her refugee policy and threatening to withhold his support for her re-election campaign, had finally decided to back Merkel. And then it gives this hilarious quote from Seehofer's speech where he's just hem-hawing. We'll go ahead and give our support. It wasn't the strongest endorsement in political history, that's for sure. It says in Spiegel, it was by far the least cheerful launch of an election campaign in recent German history. There's just no enthusiasm. And they compare it to the support for Hillary Clinton. And how much more enthusiasm there was behind Donald Trump. It says, and if the conservative campaign is as stuttering as Seehofer's endorsement, then Merkel might as well hand over the keys to the chancellery, to her social democratic challenger, Martin Schulz. Spiegel says, what a shift. What a shift. Just 3 weeks ago, it looked as though the only intrigue in the coming election would be how badly the SPD would lose to Merkel and whether the party would end up in the opposition instead of in its current role as junior coalition partner. Is the Merkel era approaching its end? Is the mood changing? It's changing, and it's happening fast. And it talks about what's happened just since the summer of 2015, not even 2 years ago. Not even 2 years ago. And that, of course, was when the refugee crisis really took off. Spiegel says when it comes to Merkel, there are legitimate questions as to whether she will be able to generate the passion necessary to fight for a fourth term in office. She has no illusions about the effects that her refugee policy has had. She talked about, I think, in an interview last year, just about how polarizing that issue had been in Germany. But then now, I mean, she's often talked in years past about leaving politics at a time when it was convenient for her, when she could just step away on good terms with everyone and ride off into the sunset. But now she's seeing all of these dramatic changes, these earth-shaking developments in the world. The problem with the refugee crisis, yes, but also just the pressure that's coming upon the Eurozone. We'll get into that in the next segment. Will it even hold together? And then the election of Donald Trump. It says Merkel doesn't want to step aside right at the moment when Europe is more divided than ever before. Doing so would leave behind an incomplete tenure. And then came Donald Trump's election on November 8th. Well, she may not want to step aside, but as Spiegel brings out here, her re-election is looking less certain by the week. Now, let's just look at these couple of verses in Daniel, and then a couple in Isaiah 10. But Daniel 8 here in verse 24, we've said often, my father made this statement a few years ago, that the empire there in Europe is already there. It's just waiting for the emperor. And Daniel 11 indicates that he's not going to be voted into office. He's going to come in by flatteries. So something unique, something is going to happen that people least expect. Whatever happens with the elections, before or after, we'll be following it closely for sure. And reminding you of what it says in Daniel 8 and Daniel 11. Daniel 8, 24 says, and his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. And he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper in practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. That's referring to the strong man, the leader that's going to lead the resurrected Roman Empire. I mean, you see it already in the world. Conditions. Everything's being primed for conflict, worldwide conflict. Russia has its strong man. It's prophesied in Ezekiel 38, and Europe is about to get its strong man. And when that man appears, it says in the Bible that he's going to destroy wonderfully. This is a great power that's emerging, just like Mr. Armstrong talked about. Mr. Armstrong gave this warning so many times. We play these clips for you over and again, and we're going to be playing them more often as we draw closer to the fulfillment of these prophecies. Where is the beating heart? Where is the engine that's going to make this beast power go? It's right there in Germany, and already with these changes to NATO and the upping of defense spending across the continent, and Europe, and rather Germany, finally stepping up to its responsibilities and then receiving the encouragement and the admonition from the United States. Go ahead, take the lead, take control even. Take control. Verse 25 in Daniel 8 says, and through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. By peace. I mean, he seems like a peacemaker. But he's going to destroy many. The whole world's going to be drawn into this conflict. And that's why we have to keep reminding you of these prophecies and about what's happening in Russia, in Ukraine, in Germany, here in the UK, in the United States. Look at Isaiah chapter 10. Isaiah 10, and we'll look at verse 3 here to begin with. This too talks about this now forming empire that's to come out of the heart of Europe. Verse 3 says, and what will you do in the day of visitation and in the desolation which shall come from far? To whom will you flee for help? And where will you leave your glory? This is an end time prophecy. And God is saying there's not going to be anywhere for our people to go. There won't be anywhere to flee to once this finally explodes. Verse 5 says, O Assyrian, the rod of my anger and the staff in their hand is my indignation. O Assyria, the Assyrian, it's God's rod. It's God's corrective rod. Don't forget about what Herbert Armstrong said in the United States and Britain in prophecy. You know how important it is for us to be able to identify the U.S. and Britain in the Bible. But those two aren't the only ones. It says, but the all-important master key has been found. Mr. Armstrong said this early on in the book. The key, that key is knowledge of the astonishing identity of the American and British peoples as well as the German in biblical prophecies. And then later in the book, he talks about the ancient Assyrians. How that before 604 BC, they left their land north of Babylon and migrated northwest through the lands that are now Georgia, Ukraine, Poland, and into the land that's called Germany today. He said, today the descendants of those Assyrians are known to us as the German people. Just takes a little bit of study. You can figure this out. This isn't too complicated. Figuring out that the descendants of ancient Assyria are today known as the German people. Verse 5 again says, O Assyrian, the rod of my anger and the staff in their hand is my indignation. God calls this nation, these 10 kings, this unified force in Europe, he calls them his rod or staff. My indignation, it says further, and he's sending it, this nation, he's sending it against a hypocritical nation. That would be the people of Israel. That would be the descendants of Israel, primarily the United States and Britain. Verse 6 says, I will send him against an hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge, to take the spoil and to take the prey and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. So God sends this rod of anger against a hypocritical nation and also a rebellious church as well, we should add. But notice God's doing the afflicting here. He's just using this instrument, this corrective rod. But it's God who's administering the punishment. This is what it takes for our peoples to finally turn it around, to finally turn to God. Verse 7 says, howbeit he means not so, neither does his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and cut off nations, plural, not a few. As I said, the whole world is drawn into this. That's where all of this is leading. All of this discussion about a European military force. All of this discussion about Germany taking control. All of this discussion about a unified Europe. It's the prophecy, the signature prophecy of Herbert Armstrong's. The signature prophecy for sure. Anyone that read The Plain Truth for any amount of time, anyone that studied his booklets, Herbert Armstrong's, is well aware of what he said about this beast power. Here's another example of it, clip 4.
But today it becomes a very solemn warning. And now the time is very imminent. The new United States of Europe is on the verge of going together. Now, it has gone together a number of times already, well, 5 times directly and a 6th time that the world hardly noticed, and we're waiting now for the 7th resurrection of the Roman Empire. And the whole world is going to be astounded.
The whole world is going to be shocked by this. You shouldn't be, though. I mean, as he said there, even history, it's come together 6 times already. This is just the seventh and final time. And it's prophesied. It's prophesied. Isaiah 10, we just read that. Habakkuk 1 says, God, I will raise up the Chaldeans. I'm going to raise them up, that same old Babylonian system. And it's going to march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. That's Habakkuk 1 and verse 6. And then down in verse 11 of that same chapter, talks about the leader of this force experiencing a mind change. A companion verse to what we just read there in Isaiah 10:7. Howbeit, he means not so. I mean, his heart doesn't think so. If you were to go to the leaders in Europe or in Germany today, the ones that are now shaping this force, this prophesied power, and tell them that they're actually building a war machine that's going to cut off nations, well, they're going to look at you like you're some crazed lunatic. But let's be honest with ourselves about the history and the prophecy. I mean, as preposterous as all of this would have sounded just a few years ago, it's not, well, think about how preposterous it would have sounded in 1945 when German cities were lying prostrate beneath the rubble and ashes of a devastating defeat. I mean, and just looking at that history, to see where we are today, it doesn't seem like it's very preposterous today. Here they are talking about a Euro force led by Germany and its political ass. Political ass. I mean, is that something that we really want? Do we really want this? The question is whether Germany can or indeed should. I mean, should they be doing this? That's about as strong as the warning gets coming from the mainstream, coming from the Bible. It's a lot stronger. It's a lot stronger. I mean, after their power was shattered at the end of World War II, President Franklin Roosevelt, Prime Minister Winston Churchill, together they guaranteed that Germany would never again be able to disturb the peace of the world. And yet world leaders go about their day-by-day routine today as if that guarantee still stands. Everything's changed. It's all for the better now. And in fact, Germany needs to be the military leader in Europe. Well, we'll see how this plays out. We know how this plays out. God's given us. He's given us the rundown. He's given us tomorrow's headlines today. Right there in the pages of your Bible. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email the program this week. You can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Revelation 6 stands out as an important chapter because of how it locks in with another one of Jesus Christ's prophecies. The glorified Christ revealed these future events to John in Revelation 6, and it was Jesus Christ as a human being, God in the flesh, who prophesied these same events in Matthew 24, the same Christ. In the traditional Christian world, we hear a lot about Christ as our sacrifice, our Savior. But how about Jesus Christ the prophet? That's exactly what he was. His gospel and his whole message revolved around prophecy. So to know Christ means to know about the prophecies he spoke in Revelation and in Matthew. This free booklet, The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, shows that what Christ prophesied in Matthew 24 is primarily for the end time. For more than five decades, Herbert W. Armstrong declared a powerful and consistent warning about the dramatic fulfillment of end time prophecy. Using the Bible as his guide, Mr. Armstrong made bold predictions about the course of world events long before they occurred. He was right encapsulates what he boldly proclaimed for more than 50 years. This free booklet will build your faith in the certainty of biblical prophecy. Request He Was Right and The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Both booklets are offered free of charge at no cost or obligation to you. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
And in the days of these kings, those toes which represent a nation to be formed, as I told you, in Europe when they go together. Now they're trying to form that now, and this economic crisis may be the thing that'll plunge them into it.
That's Herbert Armstrong from one of his sermons in the 1980s, talking about those nations trying to come together. Those 10 toes, those 10 kings from Revelation 17. And how that it may be an economic crisis. An economic crisis might be the thing that plunges them into it. My father had a program just this past weekend, Herbert Armstrong's greatest personal prophecy, and that's what it had to do with. This economic crisis that he predicted that would bring the 10 together. Let me give you one example from the program over the weekend. Play clip 7, please.
Mr. Armstrong talked about this for over 30 years. And I tell you, it's one of the most prophetic statements I think ever made in these latter days. A personal prophecy is what I'm talking about, because he made that statement over 30 years ago of what was going to happen because of the direction of our financial dealings. And all of it has come to pass, even more dramatically than we might have even expected. I'm telling you, and it is something we have to look at very closely. And there would be a severe crisis. Here's what he said. We wrote this in the He Was Right booklet that of ours. Herbert W. Armstrong warned that a massive financial crisis centered in America would ripple across the whole world and would spark the rise of the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire.
That's what my father said on the program this past weekend, referring to Herbert Armstrong's statements from 30, 35 years ago. Where he talked about a financial crisis triggering the final formation of this European power. Well, as we look at all of the political turmoil on the continent of Europe this year, we don't want to forget about all of the troubles, the struggles they're having economically as well. And what happens? What happens as the U.S. goes down, as it continues its descent? You talk about pressure being applied on the European economy. Stratfor had a couple of pretty amazing pieces on the Eurozone just this week, this first one here. As European policymakers look at the turbulence ahead in 2017, they're watching the Eurozone's bond market with growing concern. A sell-off in government bonds matching the same trend worldwide is adding stress to the bloc's already vulnerable economies, especially in Southern Europe. And it talks about how officials, economists, they're worried. They're worried by an oncoming sell-off. It says further on, well, it talks about some of the political changes that could happen, and that there's leaders in Europe, or at least those running for office, like Marine Le Pen in France, who've promised to pull out of the Eurozone as fast as possible. And, of course, there was a time when you would look at Marine Le Pen and say, well, there's no way she could actually be voted in. But this is a different Europe than it was even 2-3 years ago. It's a different world than it was 2 or 3 years ago. There's a similar call for getting out of the Eurozone in Italy and other states as well. Stratford says, if Eurosceptic forces are able to access power in either country, that's speaking of France and Italy, they wouldn't necessarily have to win a referendum on leaving the Eurozone to damage it. Even the act of scheduling a vote in France or Italy could precipitate a crisis that would shake the currency union to its foundations. It goes on and talks about Greece, the ongoing problem of Greece. They've only got enough money to survive until July, and then something again is going to have to be done. Another Band-Aid has to be applied to this constant problem. Not just for Greece, but for the Eurozone. Italy's economy is in trouble. Its banking sector is teetering on the edge of disaster. Now, that's the third largest economy in the Eurozone, Italy. And then this piece, this Stratford piece says, will the Eurozone survive the year? Is it even going to survive 2017? You talk about a difficult year. It says, some investors are showing more and more doubt in its ability to survive. They're wondering if it'll even survive this year. An economic crisis. Here again, go back to what Herbert Armstrong was saying. He wrote about it in the 1980s, that short clip I played at the start of the segment. That was from the early 80s. Notice again what my father said over the weekend. Clip 6.
Otto von Habsburg was telling you there that he was one of those men trying to unite Europe into a strong union, but he simply couldn't do it. He simply could not do it. And Mr. Armstrong at that time told him that, look, he said, I think this union is not going to come except there comes a crisis first, a real serious crisis. And he said, I think that crisis is going to be a financial crisis. Now, Otto von Habsburg said that he agreed with Herbert W. Armstrong. He agreed with him and believed what he said.
He agreed. It would be a financial crisis that would bring them all together. This is an opportunity. Remember what I said yesterday? More and more of those leaders that are looking at Donald Trump or looking at Brexit, not as something that's bad. I mean, this is an opportunity. This is what we need. Those statements about NATO that he's made, this is good for us. Because Germany can take control. Another piece here from Stratford. It says, storm clouds are once again gathering above the Eurozone. In coming months, its continuity will be threatened by events in Europe and the United States. Germany, the largest political and economic player in Europe, will try to keep the bloc together. But the crisis could be too big for Berlin to handle, especially since some of the actors involved see Germany as part of the problem rather than the solution. And that's true, of course. Donald Trump even said that the EU is a vehicle for Germany. He was right about that. And remember his trade chief last week or the week before saying that they're manipulating the currency. They're using the euro. If they still had their Deutschmark, that would be a lot stronger in today's market than the euro is. So they're taking advantage of this undervalued euro to boost their trade, all of these exports, and they're taking very little in return. And the United States sees it, and Germany's neighbors in Europe see it. It's all a perfect storm, Stratford says. Stratford says, every year of the past decade has been a test of the Eurozone's resilience, but 2017 could be the year when the bloc's very survival is endangered. Now, of course, the reason all of this is important, it's not like this contradicts what we discussed in the first segment. The fact that Europe's power is growing, the fact that Europe's military strength and might is increasing. Well, here we're talking about everything breaking up. Here we're talking about the Eurozone not even surviving 2017, perhaps. Well, the reason this is significant is because the Bible says there's going to be 10 kings. There's 10 players. There's 10 that come together. Revelation 17 and verse 12. And the 10 horns, which you saw, are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. That's the United States of Europe. And so when the Union downsizes and is then relaunched, and you have Germany taking control economically, militarily, and you have the man on the scene who's prophesied to lead it, and we could add to that, when you have the Vatican supplying its lead as well, well, then everything's in place. Everything's in place. Verse 13 says, these have one mind and shall give their power and their strength to the beast. 10 heads of state in Europe, heading up 10 nations or at least 10 groups. And they have one mind. And they give their power, their strength to the beast. For 1 hour, it doesn't last very long. But when it comes together, what unity, what oneness of mind it will have. And of course, there's going to be a spirit behind it. You can read more about that in Revelation 13. It all leads to the clash with Jesus Christ. Verse 14, then shall these shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. And then finally, you see, God's kingdom established on this earth. One final clip here from Mr. Armstrong. This is clip 2.
And in the meantime, gradually and faster, a new power is being developed from underneath. A new power that the public and the world least suspects right now, which it doesn't yet see, but which is developing just exactly as prophesied over in Europe, a resurrected Roman Empire that'll combine some 350 million of population, a power so mighty that our Western peoples will stand aghast when it happens, and we will not be able to stand up against it. I think it's about time we began to realize that one-third of our Bible is prophecy, that it does foretell what's going to happen, and that we begin to blow the dust off our Bibles and look into it and see what is going to happen.
That's Herbert Armstrong from one of his old radio programs. Indeed, it is time to blow the dust off the Bible. One third of its prophecy. And it tells us what's going to happen. I mean, if ever there's incentive to dig into God's Word, it's now, given what's happening, for sure. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll update you on some of the stats from our recent television programs here in the UK, and also move through just one or two more items from the news. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
The world is hopelessly confused about Bible history and prophecy. Understanding the Daniel 2 image could clear up most of that confusion. The Daniel 2 image gives an overview of history and prophecy like nothing else in the Bible. The Bible is a masterful work that should be studied in its entirety. The book of Daniel and the images described therein actually unlock the meaning of the prophecies in the book of Revelation. Our free booklet, Daniel Unlocks Revelation, explains the incredible prophecies contained in these two books. Studied alongside your Bible, this booklet, Daniel Unlocks Revelation, will bring the history and prophecy of your Bible to life. Request your free copy today. There is absolutely no cost or obligation. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
We've played repeats over the last 2 weekends here in the UK. And 2 weeks ago, we offered Raising the Ruins. This program, I forget the title of the program, but the one that offered it a couple of years ago, I think this was the first time that we repeated it. It brought in 121 requests for that book, a pretty sizable book, as I think some of you know. 121 requests for RTR. And then this past weekend, Is There a Real Spirit World? That one we've only repeated just this one time as well after its original airing, I think, 2 years ago. It seems like we might have repeated it once more, just from memory. In any event, it brought in 139 requests for Mystery of the Ages. And we've advertised Mystery of the Ages more than any other piece of literature over here. And yet still, every time we make it available, it brings in a nice response. 139 people requesting Mystery of the Ages. Well, Michael Walsh at PJ Media, he in a piece he posted yesterday, he drew attention to this story at the New York Times from January the 12th, 2017. This was a little over a month ago. And at the time, as Walsh brings out in his blog post, this story didn't really get much attention. It was the last few days of President Obama's presidency, just a week or so before the inauguration with Donald Trump. And the Times reported, this is January the 12th, 2017, the New York Times says, in its final days, the Obama administration has expanded the power of the National Security Agency. The Obama administration did this. The NSA, it expanded the power of the NSA to share globally intercepted personal communications with the government's 16 other intelligence agencies before applying privacy protections. So the NSA would then be able to distribute this in all of these different intelligence agencies, 16 of them. The new rules, the New York Times says, significantly relax long-standing limits on what the NSA may do with the information gathered by its most powerful surveillance operations, which are largely unregulated by American wiretapping laws. These include collecting satellite transmissions, phone calls, and emails that cross network switches boards or switches abroad, and messages between people abroad that cross domestic network switches. It says here that the change means that far more officials will be searching through raw data. Let me just repeat that. It means far more officials. I mean, these are massive changes, in other words. And the New York Times casually reporting it, I guess, and then moving on. As Walsh brings out, it got very little attention when it was first printed. Essentially, the government, this is the Times, the government is reducing the risk that the NSA will fail to recognize that a piece of information would be valuable to another agency, but increasing the risk that officials will see private information about innocent people. Now, as Walsh brings out in his posting, I mean, one of the questions that hasn't been asked, at least not nearly enough, with Mike Flynn's resignation on Monday night, is that who was wiretapping the general? Who was listening in to his phone conversations before he was even a government official? He was a private citizen before the inauguration. And the Russian ambassador called him, evidently. And it was the Russian ambassador that brought up the subject of the sanctions. Well, we don't know who is behind it. We don't know. But it does make this story from January the 12th that much more interesting. The New York Times, going back to that piece in January, it says Attorney General Loretta Lynch signed the new rules. This is all just days before Donald Trump comes into office, keep in mind. Lynch signed the new rules permitting the NSA to disseminate raw signals, intelligence information on January 3rd after the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, signed them on December 15th. Previously, the NSA filtered information before sharing intercepted communications with another agency, like the CIA or the intelligence branches of the FBI and the Drug Enforcement Administration. The NSA's analysts passed on only information they deemed pertinent, screening out the identities of innocent people and irrelevant personal information. Now, other intelligence agencies will be able to search directly through raw repositories of communications intercepted by the NSA and then apply such rules for minimizing privacy intrusions. It goes on and quotes a guy that says this is not really that substantial of an expansion of powers, but it is. It is. Of course, at that time, these were the last few days of the Obama administration, the New York Times didn't really care. If this is what President Obama wants to do, then it needs to be done. And now look at all of these leaks. I mean, together with all of this, by the way, we had a program on this just a couple of weeks ago about the Private Manning affair, the fact that he was only in jail for some 7 years. And he's another one, an intelligence analyst. All of this secret information. And he unloaded all of it. And basically is credited for creating WikiLeaks. At least he gave them the information that got him off and running. And of course, by pardoning him, this is again something President Obama did in the last days of his administration. By pardoning him, he sent a signal to all would-be leakers. Hey, the correction's not going to be that strong. Don't worry about it. Go ahead and leak away. Now you have all of these intelligence agencies, 16 of them, the NSA and so on and so forth, and their powers being expanded right through to the end of the Antiochus administration. I just want to draw your attention to a section in my father's Great Again booklet, where he talks about how weak the United States became during the Obama administration. Abroad, he means. But then in Great Again, it says, this president has not been weak on everything. Far from it. At the same time the Obama administration has undermined America's power abroad, it has amassed power within the nation, in the federal government. And he goes on and talks about all of the executive actions, and then he also brings up the wiretapping and such, the NSA. I mean, there were a few at the time of this massive expansion during the Obama administration that did sound the alarm about what the NSA was doing. But not nearly enough. And we've got it right there for you in the Great Again booklet. And President Obama was signing off on extending those powers, all the more so, even days before he left office. My father writes, in June 2013, we learned that the NSA has a secret data warehouse in Utah, a $1 billion epicenter, where it can store massive amounts of information. Microsoft, Yahoo, Google, Facebook, YouTube, AOL, Skype, PalTalk, and Apple were caught handing over to the government all kinds of information about Americans, including phone records, emails, and other digital communications, and claimed they were forced to do so. However, the NSA says there is no cause for concern, no reason to worry about it. An agency spokeswoman said that its operations will be lawfully conducted in accordance with U.S. laws and policies. Well, those laws have now been liberalized. Those powers for the NSA have now been expanded. And now you have all of this intelligence, quote unquote, all of this information circulating from one agency to the next, from one intelligence gathering unit to the next. And those, of course, as we've seen with the Flynn case this week, those powers have most likely been abused. Here are all these leaks, and there's really nothing much to them. And yet the opposition to Donald Trump, I mean, they're making this out to be the worst scandal since Watergate. And what is it that was actually even done? A discussion between an oncoming national security advisor and a Russian ambassador? What was discussed? Well, that's not really, there's really not much to it from what we can discern. You compare that with what President Obama or then Senator Obama was doing in 2008, talking to the mullahs before he even came into office about just hold tight, you're going to get a much better deal from me than you will George W. Bush. That was going on in 2008, and that did damage the nation severely. But coming back to the expansion of NSA, look in this, I think it's on page 5 of Great Again. My father concludes this, the section here, saying, Americans have grown accustomed to and complacent about this steady erosion of their privacy and liberty. They do not prize freedom as they once did. This carelessness is going to come at a high cost. And we're seeing that already. Who is wiretapping the general? And why? Who is behind it? And if they're going to expose it to their friends in the media, let's get it all out there and see what exactly was said. Well, I've got more here that we could elaborate on with this, but I just thought it was interesting in particular when you consider what my father's had to say about this, the previous administration and just this massive expansion of power at home, even as America's position in the global community weakens all over the earth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.